podcast, where we geek out about board games, the mechanisms behind them, and the people who create them. I'm your host, Candace Harris, and I'm here today with Board Game Geek's Director of Media, like, literally, here in this same space.
We're in the same
space. With Lincoln Damhurst. And this is a, like, the first episode where I'm not at home. We are in Lincoln's Game Night studio today. How's it going, Lincoln?
It's going great. It was good having you here today.
Yeah, we were here today recording a BGG show that's coming out soon.
We might as well tell people it's a top 10, which we don't love doing necessarily. I mean, they're hard. You'll see. It'll be typical of my lists. I'm restricted to a certain number. I always have more. So I'm going to do it again today.
Totally. But yeah, it's actually really cool to be doing this in person. And there aren't many people that I can do this with.
Yeah,
in person,
I mean, I mean, we should take advantage of being here in Los Angeles. It's actually a treat to be able to do this. I think the only time I've ever done a podcast locally was when I did Board Game Babylon with Eric Burgess. It was Scott,
nice.
Nikki, and I think we're all on one. That was the only time I've ever maybe done one
live.
Locally, yeah.
Oh, cool.
It's always been over the internet, you know, which is cool and works perfectly fine, but it is definitely fun to actually see the other person.
Cool. Oh, yeah.
I mean, we watch them on the computer, too. I mean, all that, but it's still just nicer to be in the immediate vicinity. Plus, I think technologically, even though you and I obviously overcomplicate things more than we need to, it's still smoother, you know, to do it
totally.
Locally. Yeah.
Totally. So we have a BGG show coming out soon in relation to when this episode drops.
Yeah, it should almost be the same time.
Yeah.
I don't know I don't know when this comes out, but ours
Friday.
Is soon. Yeah, okay. This Friday?
Yeah, this Friday.
Okay, wow. So, hey, editing this week. Candace is busy. But yeah, it'll be next week probably when that comes out.
Yeah, and another thing coming that hasn't been out in a while on the BGG front is Game Night Date Night.
Yeah, it's been a long time. So we, not really a long time, a year and a half, but we had always wanted to do Game Night Date Night. Or there's a couple things we wanted to do. We wanted to do like From the Vault because we have tons of old games we love. But we always want to do Game Night Date Night. But, you know, it's effort, right? It's more work and it's definitely harder for Nikki and I to just do that because when we produce the show, it's a lot of stuff. You know, it's very difficult for me to manage like helping with the teach and things like that.
Sure.
Technologically, sometimes things are challenging when we're filming. And so I have to worry about that as we're filming. So it's amazing I actually play any decent games because I'm constantly worrying
about
audio
everything.
Problems. Yeah, exactly. So, but what happened was is Game Night Date Night happened out of necessity because during the pandemic, we couldn't have people over. We were fortunate that we had a bunch of episodes in the queue, so we went through till about August. I think we might have debuted, I looked it up recently, but we had done our first Game Night Date Night was for Watergate.
Nice.
I'll talk about that later when we get to it, but because it's on the list. But we were super happy, you know, that we could do that, and it was fun to try a slightly different format. And, you know, we played with like the lighting initially and stuff like that. I think that lasted for a little while and then we kind of went back to full bore lighting. But the show ended, not really ended, but went on hiatus when we started to have locals in. So we did the loop with Deborah and Aaron, which was a very big treat because it had been more than a year since we'd almost a year and a half, a year and 3 months or something like that, since we'd had people over to film. And, we were so joyous because it wasn't so much effort for us that we basically just were like, enough. We want to get back to it, but we need to have the time.
Take a break.
And we added things like we live stream biweekly. I mean, we live stream every week, but we do it Tuesday. It alternating Tuesdays and Thursdays. So we also have, and then I've been painting minis as well on those other days.
Yeah. Busy.
But that's more work, right? That you don't. You think, oh, it's not a big deal, but it is. You're learning another game. It's kind of energy that could be spent on Game Night, Date Night. But we are using it to, we always are auditioning games on the live streams that we might play. And even though I prefer that we haven't played a game when we do Game Night, I like the questions and the interaction that happens when it's a first play.
Sure, sure.
So yeah, that's a big change.
Well, and the other thing with Game Night Date Night is in 2020, Wow, in 2020. In 2023, we're going to experiment with me and
others,
Aaron.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. We definitely want to get back with Nikki and I first, just yes. It's our show, but air quotes there. But we do want to have others. So particularly, it won't always be Nikki and I. It might be, like Candace says, Aaron and Candace want to do a war game or something like that, which will
be
fun.
Yeah, we have quite a few historical strategy games that we're thinking about,
right.
Like some two-player card
It'll expand it. I mean, I still will have to sort of produce it, but I leave so Candace comes into the studio all the time now to do our In Focus and How to Play videos that she's producing, and I generally let her do it. I'll come in, you need a pair of hands, you need some technology. We use a few little instruments that record stuff very nicely, and I'm sort of the manager of that, but eventually Candace will be doing that herself, and that's pretty great. And it's nice to be able to use this. We have such a great resource with the studio. It really, really helps. And it's great having people local. I mean, we are so happy to have you on. That's been wonderful.
Well, I am happy to
And we
be
need
here.
You on game night. We need
yeah,
you on.
I'll be back on game night.
The
yeah.
last one you were on was Top 10, but I was remembering it as older, but I keep saying 2 years ago, but Top 10 was the last one for the SDJ Award nominees in for 2022, which is fun.
We've just been like so busy.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I'll definitely get back on regular game night too. But in the spirit of game night date night coming back, today we're going to discuss our favorite two-player games that can be played in an hour or less. And Lincoln, I know, you know, like you said, you and Nikki spent a lot of 2020 and 2021 playing two-player games together or just playing, you know, multiplayer games as two-player games on game night, date night. So I'm curious to know what some of your favorites are.
Sure.
Plus, like, quick playing two-player games are just a great way to get people into the hobby.
Absolutely.
They're just very accessible. But before we start discussing our favorite two-player games that can be played in an hour or less, I'd love to hear what you've been playing lately, Lincoln.
Ah, okay, so we're going to start with that.
So let's jump into Fresh Plays.
Nice. So my first that we just recently played was one that came out at Spiel. It was Beer and Bread from Scott Alms and Deep Print and Capstone Games. And I really love that game. It actually has, you can feel the heritage of the Eggert Spiel games. You can see that that's one of their types of productions. And it was really great. It took us a little while. We only just recently played it on a game night live. And we're going to probably do it on a game night. It won't be the first game night date night. There's another one that'll be in this list that will probably be number one because we really love it. But it's a fantastic game and it plays really well and it's quick. You know, it is a two-player game, but it definitely can play in less than an hour. Real solid, lots of great decisions. I love the interplay between the bread and the beer, like doing those. So supposedly on the live stream, I might have built a card that I'd already built or something. I need to go back and look at it. But yeah, I figures, you know, like the card play, you can potentially confuse things if you're not paying attention. But part of it is, you know, we're actually interacting with the audience when we do that stuff. And sometimes it's great. We have the designers watching and helping us and
awesome.
Leading us along. But there you go. That's Beer and Bread.
Yeah. And I actually played Beer and Bread a couple weeks ago and really, really enjoyed it myself. Like,
solid game.
It's really solid game.
And Scott Alms. I mean, he's a great designer.
Totally, yeah. Totally. So I recently played, speaking of Capstone games.
Oh yeah, that's right, you mentioned that.
I recently played Rise, which is the Spiel 2022 release, designed by Remo Conzadori and Marco Pranzo. And it's published by, originally the English-German version, DLP Games. And then there's an English-only version from Capstone Games. And these two designers also created a game called Manitoba, which was released in 2018. I never played it.
I remember that game, but I've never played it either.
Okay. And then Marco Pranzo is the designer of Historia, which is this unique looking civilization game that I've been kind of curious to try for multiple times. I almost bought it multiple times at flea markets at Strategicon, but it has this, you know, when you think of a civilization building game, you think of a map kind of thing or either you're building a map, but it has a big chunk of the game board is a colorful grid of all these boxes that almost looks like a fancy, prettier 18XX stock market. And I'm like, how does this game work? So I'll eventually try it, but Marco Pranzo is the designer of that game as well, which I wasn't aware of at the time. But Rise is a 2-4 player game, and you are basically a personality in a city, and you're trying to influence the economic and social development of a city. And the theme is very, very abstract in this game because it is essentially a track movement game. You have 10 different tracks that represent science, banking, culture, conservation, politics, industry, all sorts of things like that related to, you know, developing a city. But it feels like abstract when you're playing it, but I do like that there is a theme and it wasn't, you know, nothing. The goal of the game is to have the most victory points after 3 errors or 12 rounds. And each round you're going to pick an action card. And there are action cards that are in kind of a market, and you'll have like every player has their own factory, which is almost like a worker, and you're going to pick which action card you're going to want to take for the round. And the action cards are basically, they're two sections. There's a top and bottom, and the top is usually like a weaker version of the action. The bottom is a better version, but you have to pay money to do it. And your actions that you're mainly taking is going to just help you bump up on one of these 10 tracks. But each of these 10 tracks is very different from each other. And usually when you bump on one track, it'll let you bump on another track or have some kind of other effect. But the other thing is there are event cards that are in the market too. So depending on where you place your factory, like which action card, the very first action card costs 0, it's free. Then the next one I think is 1, then the next one's 2, the next one's 3. And in between each action card is an event card. So if I put my factory on like the 3 cost action, I'm going to trigger all of the events to the left of where I put my factory. And a lot of the events are good. So you kind of like are incentivized to like sometimes want to go spend money for an action that's further to the right just so you can trigger some of these events, which are going to help you bump on more tracks. And you also have these little school tiles, which have the different tracks on them. It'll have one track. And if another player picks the same action card right after you, you get to activate one of your books if you have any books face up, which is going to like let you bump on another track. So this game has a lot of different satisfying combos you can do with moving up these different tracks. Also, the tracks are double-sided, and each side is kind of very different from each other. So you could play the game for a while on just side A, and then you could switch and play it all on side B, or you can mix and match and have some on side A, some on side B. And each of the tracks, like even being different on the A side versus the B side, they're all kind of like different from each other. Like when you go up the school track, you're just trying to get more of those little books that you'll be able to flip over. When you go up, there's I don't remember which track it was, but you go up a certain amount, and then whenever you want to, you can say, I'm going to send my marker all the way back to start, but I'm going to get all these little benefits and as you move back, and then you just kind of like restart. There's one of them that'll let you discount cards in the action cards in the card market. There's some that are going to help you get income at the end of the round and victory points and money. I will say, like, later in the game, it's kind of challenging to keep track of all of the different actions because the action card deck is tiered. So the cards get stronger as the game progresses. And, like, you might have, you know, get a card in action where it's 3 bumps on one track. And then you take 1 bump on that track, and that might let you bump on another track, which then may let you activate a book, which lets you activate a different track. And then you're like, you're juggling all these things. And then you have to be like, well, wait, how many of the actual action did I take so far? So we had people that were like counting it while the other person was taking the action. So it's a lot to kind of like manage at the end, but it is satisfying to bump up tracks. And then also deciding on your action card can be thinky because you're questioning like, what track would be best for me to advance on based on what the kind of action cards that are available are. And then like you're thinking about the events, and some of the events are bad too. But like, are the events worthwhile? Or also, if I'm trying to get a free book activation off of my opponents, am I going to go somewhere because I think other people are going to follow me? So yeah, it's a cool game. And it seems like something good for like either starting off the night, almost, I don't know if it could be a filler. I feel like it's going to be more than an hour kind of thing.
90 minute filler.
It's definitely very thinky. But that is Rise. What else have you been playing lately, Lincoln?
Well, I'll mention two games. One will be very, you know me,
yeah,
two.
Yeah, okay. That's fine.
My first one will be that we finally got to play Ark Nova. We were kind of warned away from doing it for game night because of length. We did end up filming it, and it will be an episode, hopefully. You can never promise anything with that stuff, but the hope is it will come out. It's probably going to be one of our longer episodes, unfortunately. But the other game that I'm very excited about was Precognition, a game that you actually looked at for an In Focus video.
Yeah.
By Julien Protier and Ludonaut. And it is a cool game that has a really interesting division of your cards. You're going to have two cards coming into your decision area. And of those two cards, you're going to be passing one of those cards to the person to your left. You also will have two cards that you've pulled out of the top of your deck. You'll be choosing one of the three that are left. Then the remaining two will go to the player to your right. And that is, I can't even remember.
Yeah.
It is, yes, to your right. Everything, cards going go to your right, cards receiving from your left.
Yeah,
and
you pick one that you're going to choose for your action to play, one that you're going to pass to the person on your left,
and then the other two go to your right.
To the
So the cool thing is that you are, the precognition part is that you're trying to figure out what of the two cards on the other side of the table you will be receiving, and hope that you can actually get a pair of the same type of card. So there's four different suits relating to food, energy, Yamune or whatever, and humans, infected humans. And it's really, really challenging to actually make that all work. You really, really want to get the, I keep saying really, really, but you want to get the bonuses because there's a bonus, there's a reward or that you're going to receive for every card that you activate. You don't have to activate both cards that you have. If you can match the colors, you can also get a reward, an additional reward. And the way that works is, as far as activating, if you decide to activate both cards, it's going to be the cost of the at the bottom of each of those cards. And if you can only activate one, you don't have to pay for either of them, which is kind of interesting. But let's say you had two of the same color and you only activated one. Well, you'll still get that bonus even though you didn't activate the other second card. So it could be that you're not paying for that, so you're saving your, I say paying and I do not like that at all. It's actually you're sending out humans to collect.
Right.
And the problem is they get, the theme is actually pretty cool, but you know, the Immune are actually have figured out a way to heal the humans. They're trying to go to an island that everybody could be safe and the healing powers actually stick. And so you send out humans to go collect this stuff. For whatever reason, the Immune can't go out. I mean, they're water people, so I don't know. But anyway, and then they come back with either goods or people, more humans, infected humans. They're also infected. So you have Immune that will be healing them. And then you have Immune that are protectors that will protect you from losing humans.
Yes.
So it's actually quite a neat game, and it's very simple, 12 rounds. The really cool thing about the game is it actually has a partnership game that you can play with two people sitting next to each other opposite to other people. And so there's this neat synergy of like you're feeding cards that you're going to send to those people, hopefully the stuff they don't need. But there's also a cooperative mode that Nikki and I played on the live stream that is really neat and really hard. I can't even, we really wanted to try, when we filmed the actual episode, we were hoping to actually do a cooperative play as well, but it was just, it took us a little longer to do the single play, the standard play that we did first. But it is really awesome, and I look forward to actually playing it some more.
Yeah.
And I think that mechanism is going to be around.
Because
it is a really cool system.
Once you wrap your head around
it. It's called Dual Select, is that what it is?
Dual Select system, yeah.
I can't believe I remember that. Could not remember it for the life of me when we were filming.
Once you wrap your head around it, it is like really cool.
It is hard though.
It's a fresh take.
It's weird.
On drafting.
Like I couldn't even get the iconography right. Like one of the icons is pointing to your it's like an arrow pointing forward to your action area.
Yes.
And still I'm like person across from me. And then we were playing it with Dave and I look over and I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to get this from Nikki. No, I'm getting it from Dave, right? So I wasn't necessarily doing the best that I could possibly do as far as, because it is a challenge. It is very weird, but it is really cool once you see how it works. Even though it's coming from the other player, I love seeing what's there. You're like, ooh, because you know they have to filter. It can't be something I just handed to that person, yeah. Although when you're playing two-player it is. But it can't be something I just handed to them in hopes that I get one of those back, although it can be. But I think it's fun. You're like, okay, so he's got this going. He's going to probably pass those things to her. Okay, if I get one of those, you know, and you're hoping that you have the card in your hand to maybe make that pair up.
And then you also have the batteries, too.
Oh, my
gosh. Which is one of the other
bonuses,
Yeah.
Well,
the batteries is like a whole, you're trying to power up your machine rooms. That's a whole engine building aspect to the game. Another way that you can kind of get
The interesting thing about those is they only activate if you have different colored cards.
Right.
So it's a bonus that you'll get if you don't have a matching pair. And then you need to have the battery running that machine that will, if you played a battery card, which is red, it will give you some sort of resource. Could be an infected human, could be food. Or more batteries, depending on the stuff. But it also has some asymmetric powers on the batteries themselves. I mean, on the machines themselves.
Yeah.
So you flip them over. And I think everything, when it's on the other side of the board, only requires two batteries. But the game, you could lose batteries. I mean, there's challenges that come to you as you're going down the river. Because there's 12 tiles. And every fourth tile is, you got to feed your people. But the other ones could be, the first three are generally, they're good. And then the second three is when the stuff starts hitting the fan. And then it really starts hitting the fan in the fourth round. Plus, you're dealing with a whole thing called, what are they called?
The Banes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Banes, those are things that are on, especially the second and really the third season. They're called seasons. Those are the worst. Like you're, and I knew in the game we're playing, I'm like, I'm going to be getting both of these because it's a 4 and a 5 in the final round. And I just thought, I need to be protected just because I'm going to have to deal with those and I want to try to get them. So yeah, it's super challenging, but it's actually quite neat.
Yeah, it's a lot of resource management and kind of, position. Like when you get those, I call them immunes or immunes. Like when you get those, you have to decide if you're going to put them in the infirmary, which is going to kind of help to make the contaminated humans healthy, or if you want to put it in the front of the ship so that you could use them when you start getting those.
The interesting thing is sometimes those decisions are removed for you, right? Because some of the, especially in the machines, it will tell you. I think both of the ones in the standard levels, one of them is the protector, one of them is
infirmary.
Yeah, but physician or whatever, doctors. And then there's one where you can choose where it goes, which is great. Because you know, especially for the protectors, it's pretty important. There is no bonus for having them at the end of the game, but the end of the game is whoever has the most healthy humans wins the game. And it's a cooperative mode, it's 30 for two, 30 healthy humans for two players, 45 healthy humans for three, and 60 for four. So it's very challenging. I mean, we tried really, really hard and could barely make it. Because, you know, because of the things that happened, the events that happened on the river, there's always something kicking you back that makes it a little bit challenging, but it's very good.
That is Precognition.
Precognition, yeah. Great game. Check it out.
And that's a new release, or was that late 2022?
It came out the 16th of December, which is crazy.
Okay.
It's too late in the year, I feel, for a game release, but you know, I did see it at Spiel. That's where we actually got a copy of the game.
Cool. Well, speaking of saving humans, the second game that I'll mention that I played recently is Polynesia, which is a 2020 release from Pear Sylvester.
I think we actually did that on...
on one of the conventions.
No, we did.
But you did it on game night?
I think we did it on game night, date night, maybe. I mean, I know we played it on the stream. It's fun with two.
But it is...
and beautiful. Oof.
It is designed by Pear Sylvester, who's the designer of The King is Dead, Brian Boru, and he also co-designed Wursin das Volk, if anyone's ever heard of that game. But Polynesia is published by Ludonova, and it plays with 2 to 4 players. And actually, the funny thing is, back in 2020, when BGG, we were doing all of those online conventions. I don't remember if it was like Gen Con Online or Comic-Con Online or something. But I hosted a couple people from Ludonova that were demoing Polynesia.
And I think we were the hands for that.
Yeah, yeah, you guys were. You were the hands for that. You or Nikki or somebody was. But when the demo was happening, you know, we were going through a lot of games and I didn't necessarily know much about them. But I remember walking away after that and being like, huh, that actually sounded neat. And then I kind of researched it a little more and I think I rewatched the video and I was like, I think I got to get this game and try it. And I'm glad I did. But in Polynesia, you're trying to save your tribe from a volcanic eruption and you're trying to like sail out and get them as far away from the main island, which is about to have a volcano erupt. You have a player board that has I don't remember how many meeples, maybe like 12 or 15 meeples or so. And then you have some boats. And one of the ways you earn victory points in the game is you're trying to get your meeples out to these further out islands that are worth victory points if you have at least one of your tribe members, not meeples, but tribe meeples, I'll call them. And the round structure is kind of tracked at the top of the board. The board is beautiful, number one. It's just, it looks like the colors are great.
Gorgeous.
The islands look great.
You know what? I think we actually didn't ever really do it as a game night, date night, because we did Byzantium. No. What was the one from Reiner Knizia?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that one we actually, because it's also a Ludonova game too, which is very good.
Ah, I know what you're talking about, but it's not don't Byzantium. Recall. But anyway,
Babylon.
Why would
I think of Byzantium?
Another,
it's actually Babylon.
Another beautiful good, game.
Yeah. Fantastic.
But anyway, the round structure is tracked at the top of the board, and each round, everybody's going to get three actions, and then there are some maintenance tasks that happen. And for your action, you can either fish and collect resources, you can explore and kind of build routes between islands, and what that means is you pay a resource and you put one of your boats out in between two connected islands, and that's how you're going to move your tribe members by connected strings of boats.
Because you build a network,
You're building a network, and then you have a travel action where you can then get a certain amount of movement points and move your tribe meeples from one island to another. And then there's a populate action where you can get meeples from your player board onto the main island, or you can, if you already have a tribe member on one of the islands out on the board, you can just add one there. But the interesting thing with the way the actions work is there's kind of a countdown. The first action, there's a 3, then there's a 2, then there's a 1. And on when you're taking the actions, the amount of times you can do the action or what you get is related to that number. So if we're on the first action and it's 3, it costs 3 to build a route with the explore action, which is expensive.
Yeah.
But if you do the fishing action, you get 3 resources, which is awesome because that's like usually the most resources you're going to get. And then like the populate action doesn't matter, you know, what action number you're on, but traveling, if you do it early, you get 3 points of movement. But if you do it as your last action, you only get 1 point of movement. So you're kind of juggling the timing of when to kind of collect resources versus building versus moving and everything with this kind of countdown system. And then after everybody takes their 3 actions, then you're going to pull a cube from the volcano bag. And it's either going to be red, black, or gray. If it's gray, nothing happens. You just take it out of the bag and keep going. If it's black, that means you pull 2 more cubes.
Right.
And then if it's red, red is kind of the countdown for the end of the game. Because when the 6th red cube comes out, that is game over. But after you do the volcano cube pulling, then there's like a decline phase where whoever is the first player for the round is going to pick a resource. And everybody who has any of that resource, including them, has to get rid of all of them. And then after that, you can gain resources. So each of the islands on the board, not all of them, but many of them will have either a fish or a shell icon, I should say. Those are the 2 resources in the game. So if you have at least 1 meeple on an island that has a resource icon on it, that's income at the end of the round. So you're also trying to get your tribe members not only to the spaces that have a victory point value, but also to get some income. And then on top of that, there are certain islands that are going to have tokens on them, which if you're the first one to get there, you can pick up a token. Some of the tokens could be like, oh, take another action for free immediately. Or it could be a mask. And with masks, they mean something different every game because you have these three different, I think they're called tide cards that you'll pick. There's a handful of one level tide cards, two level tide cards, and three level. And each of them kind of means something different. But there's I think it's tide number two cards. That deck is always going to be related to the masks. Like, oh, this game, when you pick up a mask, maybe it means you get to take a bonus action or you get to put a tribe member out immediately where you picked up the mask. You know, it has kind of like special rules like that. Some of them give you other ways for like end game scoring. But the other thing is, on your player board, the more meeples, tribe meeples that you get off of your player board by the end of the game, you're going to get more victory points for. And if your meeples are just on that main island when the volcano erupts, they come back to your player board. So you're trying to like balance all these things. And there's just like some really good player interaction with the fact that what I didn't mention is, you can use other people's boats.
Yeah, yeah. So that's where you pay. That's why you want your own network, so it's cheaper to get out to the outlying islands.
Yeah, it's cheaper. But you can also, so like, for example, if Lincoln is blue and he has a boat and I'm one of my meeples is with him on an island that I'm trying to get to, I can pay him a resource, whatever resource he used to build the route, and I can have to take his meeple with mine as a guide, which is awesome because not only does it give you some flexibility to kind of move to different islands where you don't already have your own route, but also you can mess with other people's plans a little bit.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of really good player interaction, and it's a game that I would say looks deceptively nice, but can be mean because you can kind of do stuff like that. And there's also, there's an expansion map, which I haven't tried. So there's a great deal of variability and replay value that comes with just using different cards from the tide decks. But also if you play with a different map, it's going to kind of change things up quite a bit. And that is Polynesia.
Yeah.
So Lincoln, you think it's time we start talking about some two-player games?
It is.
Cool, cool. All right, well, I'm gonna start with you. I don't know about you, but I kind of am going to go from 5 to 1.
Yep, I'm doing the same thing. I'm going to just quickly name two honorable mentions that I really, really enjoyed. One of them was a pandemic game for us. It was Herloff from Alexander Kniepkins and Inga van Dasselaar and Jolly Dutch
Protection. Trick-taking, right?
Two-player trick-taking game. It supposedly does three as well, but we never play. It's like supposedly best with two. And it is a pretty solid trick-taking game for two players. I mean, there's enough things going on that makes it, and you know, you're betting on how many tricks you're going to take and things like that. What was surprising is how often we actually both would hit those targets, like looking at the cards. But it's a really solid game. It's a little hard to get. We sold it in the BGG store after seeing it at that time, and I'm sure it's probably still around because it's pretty solid. And the other one is Holmes Sherlock versus Mycroft, or Moriarty, if you get the English version, the Devere version. I mean, I think the English version was Devere, but like Cosmos did it, and it was Moriarty makes more sense. But Holmes Sherlock versus Mycroft makes sense because they're the both Holmes brothers. But anyway, have you never played that one?
No,
it's great. It was probably the first Devere game that I ever played, and It's a set collecting game. So you're going around investigating in all these locations, and we played it teams on our episode of Game Night many years ago. I think it was nearly 6 years ago. It was Steph Straw and Rusty Howell were on, and it was boys versus girls, which was a mistake because we lost. Spoiler. But
girls.
But it was great. It was I love the. So if both teams visit one of the locations of the people, it fatigues that person, so that card gets flipped over, so you can't collect what it's telling you. That's what's great. You can either get clues, I think they're called clues because there's magnifying glasses, or cards, and you're trying to get sets, you know, because value numbers, and if you have like a outright majority, you get a bonus for that. It's really, really great. I was supposed to be quick on that. So anyway, cool. Then we'll go to my number five, which is Jaipur from Sebastian Pochon and GameWorks. And I think recently the newest version is from Space Cowboys. It was one that we kind of, I think we've had in our collection for a long time, but never played. And it is a really, really great two-player game. One of those deals where you see all these options, you really want to do everything. Like, I really need to do this. And it's another set collecting thing. But there's like this really fun element where when you claim something, you get to take a token out of the bag and you don't know its value. So it's a little bit of risk. Like, okay, is this, I mean, the reality is you have to go for it, because even if it's only 2 points, it's still worth it. But really great game. And the art is really phenomenal. And I really like Sebastian Pochon's designs. I've not played everything, but like Ispahan, I think, was the first one I played of his game that's really, really great. And it's just amazingly solid for how like compact it is. Like, it's very, very simple. I know a lot of people play that when they're traveling and stuff like that, because it's a small box. The original version is even tinier than I think the latest version of that game. But you know, Sebastian is Swiss, but like they in France, they really love two player games. It is like probably the best. Best market for two, and I know that, you know, Nikki's worked for French publishers, and two-player games are very popular in France, and they always are sad that they aren't popular here, because another one we played recently, Sebastian Pochon as well, was Raptor, that I really, really like, you know. I think that was Sebastian Pochon and Bruno Feduti, isn't it?
Oh, I was going to say, was it both Brunos?
I don't think, it could be. Actually, you know what, I think you're right. I think it is Bruno Catala, okay. Yeah. It's okay. Bruno and Bruno, yeah. I mean, there's no confusing the two. I love them both. They're both really nice guys. But yeah, Raptor was really solid too. And it doesn't feel like, I mean, Bruno Catala is a great designer, and I think he's great with two player. Bruno Feduti's like a little bit more chaotic. Although I think that's a real generalization with his designs, but it's really, really great game. Talking about Jaipur, but yeah.
Cool. Well, this is really funny because my number five is Jaipur.
Oh, hey, great.
And oh my goodness, like when you were talking, I didn't want to like say anything to, you know, announce that. But the funny thing is, when I originally bought Jaipur, you mentioned people like to take it to travel.
Yeah.
I brought it on the plane. Matt and I were traveling back to Philly to visit family. And I broke it out on the plane. I opened the rule book and I, you know, learned the rules in about probably 3 minutes.
It's easy.
And
it's wonderful.
Yeah, we started playing on the plane. And then when I got, so we played a couple games on the plane, you know, on the little trays there. And I had the older version with the smaller box.
Yeah, yeah, that's
which
what we
is
have too.
Cool. But then I got home and I showed my mom and I taught her. And she loved it. So I ended up leaving her my copy.
Yeah.
And I was like, you keep it. Months later, I then bought another copy for us to have at home in LA. And then, you know, several months after that, a friend came to visit.
And you played it
and
with them.
She and her boyfriend at the time were about to go on this long train trip. And I was like, you know, I have a whole thing where I call myself Board Game Oprah, where I like to like give people games that like, you know, I have a lot of games.
Look behind you. There's three copies of Wyatt Earp. I love that game. And I always buy it when I see it to give it away.
Yeah. I love giving games to other people that are, you know, curious about games or interested in games. So anyway, I said, hey, you guys take this. And they played it, so then I gave away my second copy, and they played it on their trip and had a blast, and, you know, kept asking me for more recommendations. But yeah, Jaipur is just such a solid banger that, like, plays in, you know,
quickly.
Like, it plays quickly, it's, like, lots of,
it's
like,
very clear, you see exactly what you need to do, and you're like, but I need to do that too.
Yeah.
And I love the drafting. I love it. I love the, what do they call it? Where it's the card that
the camels?
Yes.
Yes.
Because I love that. Yeah. I mean, I love it. You don't want to ignore those.
Yeah.
But like when I've played, I'm like, wipe them. Let's take them all. Let's see what we get. I don't care if I reveal. It's part of that whole thing that I love about Bruno Catala with his replenishing the board games that are out there. Because another one that's not on my list that I really actually love is Sobek, that has that where you're like, I don't want to be the, you don't want to be the person to replenish. You're like, I really don't want to replenish.
Because then you're opening up a bunch of stuff for your
opponent.
Super
fresh. We'll talk about that with another game here.
But yeah, anyway, like Jaipur
that's
is great.
We both had
you
it
have
number
like
five.
Two. You have two. We both had it at number five. You have two actions. You take cards or you sell cards.
Yep.
And you know, just you're right. Like the timing of when you want to sell, if you're trying
I know,
to build
you
up,
get the, you
want to
get that big bonus.
Stuff.
Those more valuable chips.
Yeah,
you know? It's pretty great.
So like lots of really cool decisions. Easy to play. Easy to learn. And quick. Like really solid. Jaipur. That's funny that it was both our number five.
Well, I suspect we're going to have a few overlapping games here, but it's exciting. I mean, I love all of these. And I'm not even a two-player game guy. I mean, I definitely love the social aspect of playing games, but I have some great memories of playing two-player games. We'll talk about a couple of those up ahead.
Okay. Well, what's your number four, Lincoln?
My number four is Watergate from Matthias Kramer and Frosted Games and Capstone. So we had an interesting deal where we went to a game event, a little game night with Trey Parker, and there were five of
us.
That's awesome. And Trey wanted Nikki and I to play Watergate. And so he taught us how to play Watergate, and he loves that game. And we were totally smitten. The game is really amazing. As I said earlier, it was our first game night, date night, and it is really a great game. I really like Matthias Kramer on top of all of that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's
a
great designer. But it's so interesting to play a game from a German publisher and designer that is about American history. And there's some fun, interesting things going on with that game as well. It's the tug of war on the right. You have that tug of war that you're working at, and you're really trying super hard to make sure that you play the right amount of stuff to get the most pull that you can get. And it makes it a really fantastic game that I cannot recommend enough. I've already given away one copy.
That's
and
awesome.
I think I have two copies of that one to also give away because, you know, I'm keeping one for myself. I'm not as crazy as Candace. I generally try not to give the copy away that we have just because we've gotten bitten on that one before. But I am a big time. I'm not Board Game Oprah, but I don't know what I am. But we definitely will give away games because that's the thing. If somebody loves a game, when we filmed Just One, we had six or seven people here for that game. And two people there, Deborah and Kevin, both love the game. Like, oh, well, I got copies for you. You know what I mean?
Nice.
So it's like, well, it's really fun, you know, especially for people that are a little bit trying to figure out what to buy games. Deborah was absolutely new to gaming at that time. And so it was something that I knew she would love, right?
Yeah.
I mean, she already played it, but I knew that it'd be great because she'd play with others. So that's always a great thing. And I am definitely a board game ambassador. I suppose that's what I could say there, where I'm trying to promote growth and understanding, you know, as far as something that's simple, that has the right kind of choices that are strong for people that to get them into the hobby.
Yeah,
because it's fantastic.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm now, the more I think about these games, there's more that I missed here for sure. Choosing
course,
five is tough.
Course.
Yeah.
Five?
But there's another real solid one like that, which I would say is Codenames Duet, you know, that's a real solid.
But five is tough. And just to circle back to Watergate is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So it is actually my number four.
This is
eerie.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding at all.
That's good. So I can always do the like really weak summary of the game, and then you can get in a little bit deeper, which is good.
I cannot believe that we are now... We've picked out of all of the two-player games. Okay, that's crazy. And they're in the same position
exactly.
So far. That is wild. But yeah, so in Watergate, one player is basically taking on the role of a Washington Post journalist.
Yep.
The other represents the Nixon
administration. Yep.
And I think each player has their own deck of cards.
Yep.
And to win, basically the Nixon administration player has to build up momentum to end the presidential term. And then the journalist, on the other hand, is trying to collect evidence.
Yeah, to tie them.
Yes.
Yes.
And you have to, like, the game board looks like this evidence board, like
with
a
those
crime
strings,
scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the strings and the pins. And you're trying to get different evidence and connect them to two different informants. So you have this kind of, like, asymmetrical, like, tug of war, like you're saying, that's happening. And yeah, on your turn, it's a card-driven game, so you play a card.
Yeah, Nixon just wants to ride it out as far as they can, which is, I love that element
Get that momentum.
Yeah.
But yeah, you play a card from your hand, and cards have a value to them, but they also have an event, so you can either choose to use the value to kind of move either evidence or the momentum up or down on this track, this like tug-of-war track.
I love that there's two things that are going on there, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
You see the Washington Post players, and you're just like, oh, you know. I mean, because I think that's actually, I love playing both positions, but I think I love the element of like the Nixon administration and seeing them making those connections and doing everything you can to block them to have to go a different route to connect it.
So when we did the BGG retreat in 2020, mm-hmm. and we did that big game day, that might have been the first game I played that day, but Rodney actually taught me.
Right.
And played against, I think he beat me. I think I still owe him a rematch. But yeah, so I had kind of a memorable first game of it too. But yeah, it's great. And we have awesome geek up bits for them
too. Oh my gosh, are amazing.
Feel great for like the evidence.
I love the push pins.
Yeah, and the push pins. So that's really cool. Anyway, so that's both of our number four.
Yep.
Watergate. I think we're going to diverge from here. I'm pretty sure, but we'll see. What is your number three?
They may not be in the exact same position, but I bet we have at least one more. So my number three is Seven Wonders Duel from Antoine Bauza and Bruno Catala. It's always going to be a solid one. It probably would have been higher up in the list until just a month or two ago, because it is an amazing game. I prefer it to standard Seven Wonders because Bruno Catala is amazing. I love that you do not want to take things because you do not want to unlock other cards for them.
For your opponents,
I love those choices. It is so painful to make that. So my first play of that was with Scott. We might have been playing a prototype or very early release of it at the gathering. And Cedric Comand, who was one of the heads at Repo, came over. And I don't know if he taught us. He might have taught. I think he did teach us. And it was amazing. Like, I could not believe how strong that game was. And, you know, you feel the Seven Wonders element there. But I love... like, it's all right there in front of you. There is none of this drafting stuff that you need to, like, hope that these things return to you. You just have to do your best to claim the things that you need to, you know, you can focus on your military, you can focus on the culture and all that stuff. It's really, really well done.
Yeah, and actually, I played Seven Wonders Duel way before I played Seven Wonders.
Oh, interesting.
You know, I kind of got into the hobby wackily, you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't start with Catan, you know, like a lot of people do or anything like that. And when I eventually played Seven Wonders, I wasn't impressed. Like, I didn't, like, love it.
At the time, it's still an amazing game, and people are still discovering. Dave had friends of his that just found it, and I think he went and played it with them or taught them. And, but it was really, really strong. Like, that whole drafting thing was great. I just felt, I think I prefer it with a smaller number of players versus, I think I played it with seven many times.
Yeah.
And I think I prefer the smaller number. And it's fun. You know, you're
just
hoping these things get back to you.
It just wasn't as good to me as Seven Wonders Duel.
Seven Wonders Duel is amazing. It's a different game.
Yeah,
I mean, it's really the theme that I love, actually. I love the theme on both of those things because it's a Civ game, a little teeny Civ game, you know, in Seven Wonders. But Duel really, really hammers it home. And it's my preferred way of playing that game. I don't think I've played Seven Wonders in a long time. And we've got the new edition, maybe, when they did that one at the 10th anniversary.
And then there's Architect, too.
Yeah, Seven Wonders Architect's great. Last year. But it's different. It's also, I think Dave talked about it in our top 10 video, where it was like, I think he did, but it plateaus more easily, right? It doesn't have the depth. Like, you've played a few times, regardless of the different civilizations you take, you kind of played it out. But I love that game too, because it's super simple to get in and gets kind of people into the Seven Wonders system, you know, which is really, really awesome.
Yeah. And I know, again, Seven Wonders is a very, very popular game and probably a gateway game for a lot of people. Yeah. I think I just kind of missed
But it's also, you might, at your point in discovery, it just probably didn't check any boxes for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It was cool. It was cool. I will play it again.
Yep. But so what's your three?
So my number three is not Seven Wonders Duel. So I told you we're on different paths now. But my number three is Blitzkrieg, World War II in 20 minutes, which is another tug of war game. Yep. You know,
I've not played that one. I watched Nikki play it with Scott. And and it looks great. It's one that we actually would like to do on date night at some point in time.
Came out in 2019. It's designed by Paolo Mori, who designed Ethnos, Libertalia, Dogs of War, and it's published by PSC Games. And it is basically an abstract kind of World War II game where one player is Axis, other player is Allies. And the game board abstractly represents the various theaters of World War II. And each of the theaters is a track that is its own kind of tug of war. Look, I'm tying tracks and tug of war games in this episode.
Yeah. Well, two player games are a lot of tug of war.
There are. Yeah, you're right. There are a lot of tug of war two player games. But there's a red cube that's in the center of every track. And both players have their own bag that has cardboard tokens that have a value on them. And it's either going to be a tank, a ship, or a navy ship, or a plane. And the spaces under each track, they'll either be blue, brown, or blue/brown, meaning a water space, a land space, or you can land or sea. Yep. So if it's
swamp.
A water space, if it's a water space, I can put a ship tile on it, but I could not put a tank tile, and then I could put a plane on either or. And these tokens have a number on them, and that's how many spaces you're going to advance the token towards your side, because you're trying to pull the token towards your side and get it away from your opponent's side. But also, the spaces where you're placing the tokens give you kind of bonus actions. Most of them, there are some that are just plain and are nothing. But some of the bonus actions might let you draw an extra tile so that you have your tiles hidden behind screen. So it's almost like a hand of cards. But some of them will let you get special fancy tokens that that you'll draw and, you know, toss into your bag and in a sort of a bag building way. But anyway, this game just has, number one, it's pretty easy to learn. It does not take long to play. I don't know if I've played it in quite 20 minutes before, but it's definitely like, you know, plays in under an hour. Otherwise it wouldn't be on this list. And, the cool thing is like a friend of mine who, in the past 2 years, I've gotten like really excited about board games. I sat down and played with her, and it was something where she probably would not have been like, sure, oh, a World War II game.
Yeah.
But we had this like game where she had me sweating. And here's why. Because there is one action that you can put your tile on. One of the icons is like, it's a bomb. And when you bomb someone, you get to reach behind their screen and take one of their tokens and put it back in the bag or discard it or something. And one of the ways you can lose the game is if you ever run out of tokens behind your screen. So I was sitting there with one token behind my screen, and I'm watching my friend Lee as she's deciding where she's gonna place. And she's like looking at a space that has a bomb, and I'm like, no, don't do that. No, don't do that. And then she eventually picks something else, but it was just like that whole moment of like,
dread.
I was sweating. Yeah. Like she had no idea that that was going to end me if she did that. But anyway, it's just a really cool game. I like bag building games. I like the, you know, that you have different tracks that you can choose which one you want to go on. Also, if you're able to get to the end of a track, you kind of like lock that track down. So, I don't know. There are a lot of like cool choices, cool bonuses. The extra tiles that you can add to your bag are cool. And that is Blitzkrieg World War II in 20 minutes.
Nice. Well, my number two is Splendor Duel from Mark Jacobs and Bruno Catala. It is from Space Cowboys, and I really love Splendor, but Splendor Duel, once again, Bruno Catala does a great job of putting in the tension, and the way you replenish, so it plays a lot like Splendor, but the difference is you're not drafting tiles to, single tiles to build up your hand, your currency.
Mm-hmm.
This one has a grid, and you choose either a three in a row or three in a column or three diagonally. And what that does is, you know, you can only take, you can't take more than one gold. I think you actually can only take the gold when
there's
you're
some restrictions. Yeah.
But you're like trying to get, you do not want to replenish. You don't want to be the person to make that replenish, because there's things like the pearl, which the pearl is, you need on a lot of cards. Nikki was mentioning it in our, I think she actually had it in our top 10, her top 10. And you don't want to take, you really don't want to give somebody that choice selection of tiles that they can get. And you do have a hand limit. I think you can only have 9 tiles. But it has exactly the same elements as the main game, but super tight. And it's changed it a little bit, like what's going on with them. Mm-hmm. As far as like the Nobles, I think is what Dave was saying it was called. It's been so long that I actually, yeah, you know, I mean, I love the theme, but like getting it, sometimes it just doesn't stick in my head. But you're trying to go for the most crown. I think whoever reaches 20 crowns or something like that. And it is really, really great. I've actually played it like 4 or 5 times.
Oh, that's awesome.
But I haven't played it for a little while. And it's one of the ones we would like to start the show with, returning game night, date night. But it is very, very solid and feels exactly similar to Splendor. And I think you could probably play Splendor as a 2-player game. I can't remember.
Yeah, and yeah. It's, regular Splendor is, it actually is great as a 2-player game.
You know what? We've played it on the app. Nikki loves playing it on the app.
Yeah, but the thing is, Splendor Duel does something different.
Yes.
Like, it just in the way that that Bruno Catala, right?
Yeah, changed
Seven Wonders to Seven Wonders Duel.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Yeah, because it's like, you could play Splendor fine with 2 players.
Yep.
But Splendor Duel is awesome. I played it with Eric at Gen Con. We got like kind of a sneak preview game in. And I remember walking away being like, this is really cool. It's
really amazing.
It surprised me.
Yeah.
But it's really good. And I would say that's an honorable mention for my list, because it's not on my list, but I really like it. I've only played it once.
Yeah, I've played it a bunch of times, you know, 4 or 5 times. That's a bunch for us. Usually we get to play games once, but it agreed that it is like, it is taking it to another level. And you almost wish it was sort of doable with more than 2. Even though it doesn't need to be, because the regular game is really great. But yeah, Bruno Catala is really an amazing designer. He's literally one of my favorite designers.
That's awesome.
You know, I know the brothers Murph go on and on about, well, they're now kind of like in the court of, the church of Phil Walker Harding, because they praise me. But yeah, they also like Bruno Catala. Actually, they're the ones that got me to try Raptor. They kept including it in their top 10 list of things that they were doing. And I'm like, I have to check this game out. I don't think I'd ever even heard of it, which is crazy because, you know, Nikki used to work with Matigo, and that's a Matigo game. And somehow it just, you know, there's so many games that
you can't find them all.
Even when I actually do pay attention to Bruno Catala's releases, somehow I miss that one. And I like Bruno Faduti too. I mean, he's actually one of my favorite designers as well. One of my games that we talked about on the top 10 was, although it was an honorable mention, was Trollfest, which I think you'd like that game too. It's
cool.
It's rock concerts, you know, you're putting on these fantasy rock concerts.
Awesome.
It's cool.
Yeah, Raptor, I ended up getting early on, I think. I don't remember how I found it. Maybe I saw somebody's favorite 2-player games on YouTube or something. But yeah, that's a solid one. That is one that I
Another
ended up giving
mention.
Away.
Yeah. Oh, did you? Yeah.
yeah. But I liked it a lot. I did like it a lot. I thought it was cool. So my number 2 is 7 Wonders Duel. So 2015, I mean, we already kind of talked about it, but it's a 2-player reimplementation of 7 Wonders. Yeah. And, you know, you get wonder cards, but only each player gets 4 wonder cards, but you're only building 7 throughout the game.
Right.
So one of you is not going to be able to build all 4. So there's kind of a race to build the wonders. I really love that there are 3 different ways that you can win the game, you know, going the military route. There's like a scientific route. And then what's the other way?
There's a culture, I think.
Each round you have these cards that are, like layered over top of each other, sort of splayed in a pyramid kind of shape.
And you don't want to unlock them.
Yeah.
Because boom, there's always it. I love that element though.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. The minute you expose an area where somebody can take a card flips over and your opponent, and you're just trying to avoid your opponent getting access to the goods. And you're both doing having that fight. And it's like, well, who's going to let this happen?
Well, that, I mean, that was what I was saying about like Splendor, Splendor Duel.
Yeah, same
because
thing.
You really don't.
The refresh, yeah.
It's like, and the same with Sobek. You don't want to refresh. It's like, please, I don't, I got to hold on and not.
And then
anything you can do to off-put that, you know,
the same in
kick
Jaipur
the can down
with
the road.
Camels.
Yeah. Yeah.
When the card market fills up with camels, it's like, well,
it's
who's going to be the one to take the camels?
I'm not as afraid of that one in Jaipur as I am as the other ones. Because that one, I'm like, screw it, let's go for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, camels are beneficial for...
It's interesting, though. I mean, the selection in that game, too. I mean, we can go on and on about it. But I love Bruno Catala's design, for sure.
But this game, like Seven Wonders Duel, I've had for a while, and I love it. I don't think I ever played the latest expansion for it, but I remember a couple years ago being at the Dragon and Meeple. I was playing with somebody, and we were just trying to kill time while we were waiting for people to finish a game, and we were like, let's play Seven Wonders Duel, and I hadn't played in so long, and immediately I was like, this game is so awesome. Yeah. Like, I was just reminded of how good it is and how much I love it. So it's like
two great designs. I mean, Antoine Bowles is a great designer too. So it's amazing. Yeah. You can see like when they have a great idea, how solid it can be.
Yeah, it's so good. So Lincoln.
Yep, number one.
What is your number one?
Okay, well, my number one is Targi from Andreas Steiger and Cosmos Games. I will say that it might not play in under an hour. It's rated at an hour. It's a true board game. you know, where you have lots of decisions and tough things to do. But what I love about it the most is the your selection grid. So you have these cards. There's a robber who's going to block one position, and you're trying to collect resources to then gain pay for other items like goal cards or whatever. And it is really another one where you don't want to flip things. Like you it's like, oh man, what happens is when you take, let's say a resource card, the next thing will flip with the other type of card, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And so you don't like, oh, do I want to put that that they could potentially, cause it depends on how many. So basically in my mind, I'm always doing the, okay, they're getting low on resources, time to flip something that could be like powerful for me, or, you know, hopefully it'll stick around for the chance for me to take it. And I love the theme. Like, you can't see another nomad, right? They're nomads. So you're looking across the way, there shouldn't be another one. And it's, you know, you're like cursing that selection. Oh, they took that row. Oh, I really, I needed that so badly.
So just to explain it a little bit. So Targi is a two-player placement game, which is crazy. But yeah, there's a grid of cards.
Like, yeah, the game board is like...
It's just cards.
Yep, exactly.
They're border cards, and then there are cards in the middle that get, you know, rotated through. But when you place a worker, you have to place it on a row or column card, one of these border cards, where there is not another worker across from it, directly across from it. So you start to run out. It's kind of a brilliant,
I think you can
like,
move
system.
Opposite of the robber.
Yes.
That was the one that you could
just
do.
Not your opponent's worker.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then it limits.
Cause you'll, places. I think you basically take all of the spots, pretty much all of the available. I can't remember, but
I don't remember exactly either, but yeah, I actually love Targi. I didn't put it on my list because I was like thinking it might be a little more than an hour.
It'll play in an hour when you know what you're doing. It's like you can agonize. Like, it's really, it's a challenge. But I mean, it truly is a board game. Like,
so
it really
is
in a little teeny box, you know, and full on game, you know,
which that's really awesome to kind of have that kind of meaty experience in about an hour. And in a tiny box.
Yeah, and it also has some great Geek Up bits as
We also have awesome Geek Up bits.
For both that and the expansion, it's really, really a solid.
I don't think I've ever played the expansion yet. Did you guys play the expansion?
Yeah, I think we played
Targi?
The expansion on the show because it was a new release at the time. So we were very excited to give that a go.
Cool. Okay, well, my number one, and that was Targi.
Yep.
My number one is a slight cheat.
Uh-oh. I mean, I had a slight cheat. It's just on the edge of 60 minutes.
Okay,
for sure.
Mine is not a timing thing. Mine is you can play this game with 2 to 4 players, but it's mostly played 2 players. And that game is War Chest.
I've never played that. I haven't.
Oh, it's so good. So War Chest is a 2018 release designed by Trevor Benjamin and David Thompson, the two designers behind Undaunted, Undaunted Normandy, Undaunted North Africa, which are also great games, but... definitely not under an hour in my experience for those.
Yeah.
And it's published by AEG. And basically, War Chest is a bag-building abstract strategy game. Again, you can, it does play up to four players, and when you play with four players, it's teams. But I like it with teams, but it really shines to me at the two-player level. That's why I have it on the list. Basically, in a two-player game, you and your opponent will have four different units, and there are all these different types of units. I don't remember how many exactly, but they each kind of have their own little special ability to them. So you can either draft them or just randomly pick them, or, you know, pick your favorite four. I pick my favorite four, however you want to do it. You each have four units, and each unit will tell you a certain amount of these poker chips that you'll get representing those units. And you'll start the game with, I think, two of each of your units in your bag. And then you also have like a special chip that's kind of like, it's almost like a bluffing kind of thing.
Sure.
But each round, you're going to draw three of these chips from your bag, and you're, you know, kind of keeping them face down like a hand of cards. And they each show a military unit on it, matching the cards that you have in front of you, which are your military units. And you're going to play them to take actions. So if you have no pieces on the board, and I should pause and describe the board real quick. It is just kind of a board that has a bunch of hexes. You will have some locations where you're able to deploy units out from. And then there are spaces on the board that are marked where you're trying to gain control. And that's one of the actions you can take, is trying to get control, you know, almost like putting your flag down or something. And that is the goal of the game, I think, to have four of your flags down before the other player, right, kind of thing. But you can deploy a unit. So if you pull a unit out of the bag and that unit is not on the board already, you can just say, I'm going to deploy it. And you put that chip on the board. Then once you have that chip on the board, if you have another one of those chips in your hand of three, then you can discard a chip to move that unit. Or you can activate whatever the special ability is on that unit. Or if you're on one of those control locations, you can discard it to take control of a space. Or you can bolster and stack that on top, because it'll make it harder for your opponent to kind of attack you. So you can bolster. The other thing you can do is you can also discard chips from your hand face down to then take a new token, one of the ones that you haven't had added to your bag yet, like your supply, and put them into your bag. So recruit new units for your bag. So you're doing this bag building thing where the chips you're pulling are going to be driving which actions you could take and with what units. So there's a whole balancing act to, like, which units you, you know, you don't want to probably overpopulate your bag with one type of unit. Otherwise, you'll just be only able to take actions with that one unit, you know? So there's a whole management of your units thing that's happening, and management of things that are going into your bag. But in the end, you are, again, trying to place all of your control markers. And the first person that does that will win. I should mention some of the special abilities. Like, I don't know any of them offhand, but like maybe there's somebody, usually you have to be directly adjacent to an enemy to attack them. And it's very simple. You just attack them and they have to remove one of their chips. If they only had a one stack chip because it wasn't bolstered, that means that unit is off the board. But there are some people, like they're like some kind of archery type units that can attack from two range, spaces away. Yeah, there's certain other, like there's a Royal Guard. And I think the Royal Guard, that bluff token I was talking about, like they can interact with that bluff token. And so you have all these like cool abilities, and the poker chips just feel really great. And also, like, I love abstract strategy games that have even like that little bit of theme to them.
Yeah.
But like games like Tosh Kalar, Narashima Hex, Summoner Wars, like I love those kind of games. And I thought about actually putting all three of those games on here too. But in the end, War Chest kind of just beat it out. It's just so good.
That's cool.
I think you should definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard lots of great things about it over time. And I think, once again, that's one that the Brothers Murph had mentioned on some one of their top 10 lists.
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember if I, like, when I made the connection that it was Trevor David Benjamin Thompson, and yeah. David Thompson. Yeah, yeah. But I was like, I mean, no wonder make, I love this. Yeah, like,
I didn't take, it took me a while too, even though, because like, I think them mentioning it, and I was like, what? You know, because we actually did Undaunted North Africa.
On
Game Night Date Night, yeah, I think as well. Yeah. And we were, you know, really excited about that game. So then I heard about, probably after that, on one of the top tens, I'm like, what? Because War Chest, I think we got a copy of that game and we just didn't have time to look at it. And it wasn't, I will say, the box is not really exciting. And to hear that it was a good game, like, huh, you know, maybe I need to check that out.
Yes. Yeah, you should think about doing that one on Game Night Date Night this year.
Yeah.
But awesome. Lincoln, I still cannot believe that we both had the same two games.
Well, we had three
five.
Games, essentially.
Three games in common.
Very close, yeah, very
Who
close.
Who knew?
I knew you were going to have Blitzkrieg on there. I mean, I feel that I'm going to like that game, but I didn't play it. So yeah. I watched, would it have been, because Christoph was there too. So maybe he was visiting after, I don't know. But anyway, so I watched it being played. Like, I wasn't in the room when it started and then came in and checked it out as it was being going along. And I'm like, wow, this looks kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, our copy is from the BGG library. I requested that we may not even have it now that I think about it. I asked that they send it to us so that we could try to do it on, the Game Night Date Night back when we were still doing them regularly. But yeah, we'll get back to it. It's going to be at least once a month initially, and then probably, because we're trying to slot in stuff, like we're trying to build our panel of shows that we actually have, our slate, and we're trying to, like, we want a lot of different variety. Game Night Date Night is not necessarily that different from Game Night,
right?
But it's still a good show, and I know lots of people really liked seeing that stuff, especially during the pandemic. It was a great time to actually pick that up, but it would be good to bring it back for sure.
Yeah, and the games that Aaron and I will play will add a little spice to things.
Those will be the ones that scare people away from the two-player games. But yeah, it'll be awesome.
Awesome, Lincoln. Well, I'm so glad we did this today, and it was cool to be like sitting across the table from you.
Absolutely.
Doing it.
I actually turned my microphone more to be looking directly at you. So it was like, I want to see Candace talk.
Different dynamic, different vibe today. Yeah. But really, really fun. And again, it was great to hear your favorite, like some of your favorite two-player games. Yeah. I know, like, it's hard to make any kind of
I say that
list.
I'm not really a two-player guy, but I played plenty of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And you seem to enjoy
And there's
them.
More. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Love them.
Yeah.
Love them.
Cool. Well, thanks again for joining
Absolutely.
Me.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Board Game Geek Podcast, produced and edited by Candace Harris. Special thanks to Matt Fonda for editing and mixing our music. Be sure to visit us on the web at BoardGameGeek.com. You can also find us on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and Twitch under Board Game Geek. You can reach us by email at podcast@BoardGameGeek.com. Thanks for listening, and happy gaming!